Hello and welcome to LHP. Joining me now that he is done perusing fascist Italy, Eric Sayor.
You know, I don't know why everyone cares about Pinocchio suddenly, but it feels like all those movies are competition of making him the worst little shit possible for the first like three quarters of those movies, and I kind of hate it. I kind of hate Pinocchio. Like, the movie was fine, but like fuck that little kid.
Well, that's true to the source material, which yeah. That whole story is like Pinocchio does this fucked up thing, and then he meets a wolf or a fox and a cat, and they trick him into doing a more fucked up thing. It's just yeah, exactly. That's how the story is meant to be. Even the Disney Pinocchio, it's like, geez, calm down, kid. Get it together.
It's been a long time since I've seen like the original Pinocchio, but I did watch two Pinocchio's movies in the last few months, and the Zemeckis one that came out for Disney is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. I'll say that the worst movie Tom Hanks has ever been in. And the Del Toro movie is fine. It's just Pinocchio is just a little shit. That's what that movie is. But I don't like it.
Fair enough.
I don't care. I don't understand why Del Toro made this. I guess that's the thing I'm trying to figure out is like. I mean, the movie's fine. I guess, like, fuck Mussolini and all that stuff. Like, right. He's in the movie, and they're making fun of him, and it's like, oh, yeah, love can save us from fascism. It's just, like, it's... There's just not the depth that I kind of want. That even Shape of Water, which is a pretty simple, straightforward movie, has so much there. I guess he just got the budget to make a stop motion thing, and it's like, oh, I'm making it.
Right.
But this is the project that he sold. I don't know. I feel like I just expect more from him as a director.
That's interesting. I need to actually get to this one. It's been on my list, but I still don't mind talking about it because. I'm fascinated endlessly with Del Toro and the decisions he makes and doesn't make. And this is one of those where Pinocchio has been on the list for a long time. Like I think we've talked about how I was someone who used to troll IMDb as like a child, just like constantly scrolling and looking at people's like IMDb's and what their upcoming projects were. And I remember checking Del Toro's IMDb in like 2007 and seeing Pinocchio listed. So this has been a long time coming for Pinocchio. I also saw the posting for Mad Max Fury Road in 2007. So fascinating little bit of internet history there. It is interesting to me that some projects take a long time and they die, and sometimes they come out in the year of our Lord 2022 and it's a movie with Pinocchio and fascist Italy, and I think that might actually be what it is, because I mean Del Toro made an entire trilogy about fascist Spain, so like that, when I heard that Mussolini was in the movie, I was like, oh, of course Mussolini's in the movie. Del Toro finds fascist Europe absolutely fascinating. he's a lot of his work inevitably ends up back at fascist Europe in some way or form. That kind of is the thing that made the most sense to me when I heard that. Yeah. But you saying that it's like kind of it's just there as like a place setting is interesting to me.
I mean, yeah. I in my argument, I completely forgot about Nightmare Alley as well, which is an, yeah. another, like, I don't know, very nothing movie to me. Not a movie particularly enjoyed or disliked. It's just like,
it's very basic.
I know some people, yeah, it's just basic. And I know some people really like it. And I saw a lot of people really like Pinocchio, especially as like a kid's movie compared to whatever's coming out. But I'm not watching kid's movie. I'm watching like, I don't watch a lot of animated stuff in general. So
it has to be it has to be exceptionally good.
Like, I mean, I just said I watched the other Pinocchio, but that's just because the podcast I like was covering it.
Right. And Schadenfreude, yeah. Like I'm trying to think what the last animated thing that I watched was, and it might be it's not Turning Red. I thought it was Turning Red, but I think it was the Mermaid Boys movie. From sometime during last year. I don't remember when that came out or when I watched it, but it was like during the summer. And it's because I had heard that it was interesting, so I checked it out. Whatever that, there's been so many Disney Pixar movies that it's hard to remember which one is which, because they're just like, oh, this just released 15 of them and not make it clear which ones you should watch and which ones you shouldn't.
A movie that's better than Pinocchio that also came out on Netflix is Wendell and Wild, the Henry Selick movie. That's also a stop motion movie. He's the director of like Coraline and James and the Giant Peach, a movie we covered on this show a long time ago. Nightmare Before Christmas, amongst other. That's most of his filmography, I think. But yeah, that's like a very. That's just a pretty good like kids movie with like very a lot of it is about like it's like a super anti-prison movie. It has like a lot of charming like stop motion stuff. It's pretty good. I liked it a lot better than this Pinocchio, to be honest.
Well, I'm going to watch them back to back and
let me know what you think.
And I'll message you like, you're so wrong about this. I can't wait for that moment. Probably not. I'll probably be like, yeah, I can see it. I'll probably have my inherent bias towards Del Toro will come through. I'm guessing. These are movies that I just keep on not getting to just because of time and existence.
Yeah.
But I'm going to force myself to actually sit through them because
I mean, the last Del Toro movie I was really into was Crimson Peak, I think. That's one I remember really liking in theaters, but I haven't visited it since. But I don't know. Shape of Water was good. I'm glad he won the Oscar for it. It's just not. I was obsessed with Pacific Rim when that came out.
Well, yeah. Pacific Rim
And Crimson Peak, I just really like in the I don't know, in the like just those actors and the just the vibe of it all was just so good.
I like the vibe of those movies because it reminds me of an era of movies that we've talked about that I adore. I think my problem, especially at the time and especially now after watching even more of those movies that it's sort of harkening back to, is it kind of has the same problem that Nightmare Alley has, where it is still kind of very basic and it doesn't really feel like it's moving those stories forward. Like if you took the same script and made it with Hammer in the 1970s, it would feel exactly the same. It would fit in too well with those movies. So, and on one hand, if that's what Del Toro's intention was, to just like make a Hammer movie in the modern day with a big budget, well, good for him if that's what he was trying to do. And the same with Nightmare Alley. Like it feels like one of those 1930s, 40s noir movies, Nightmare Alley, just like transported to now. But it just doesn't interest me as much as somebody like taking that and like, again, you know, moving it forward a little bit. Making something a little bit more modern and slightly more interesting, but using a lot of those same concepts, just advancing them. That would be a little bit more I guess, intellectually stimulating to me. I'm from the sound of it, you feel similarly.
Yeah, I just haven't watched a lot of those 70s movies. Like, we did watch Dracula together, and in retrospect, yeah, there's definitely like that same vibe repeated. I'm just not, I don't have the same experience as you as those 70s movies. Like, a lot of that, I guess, the comparable for that era of horror he's kind of going back to is like, we did watch some of those Giallo movies that definitely have like, the aesthetic is kind of there, but again, but it's still very, very different. There's not like I don't know, the Del Toro movie never feel like sexual in that way that those Italian movies can feel.
I don't know because he's very prepubescent with his sexuality and his
Shape of Water for like, I mean. There's, it's a very sterile movie considering the subject matter. Yeah. I guess this is how it wins Best Picture, but it's like, I mean,
yes, movie about fish sex is extremely sterile. Yes,
for what it is. I mean, he's an interesting director. That I feel like I've watched most of his movies. I don't think I haven't seen Mimic, and I haven't seen Blade 2. Which might be a crime to you personally.
You've missed one of the greatest films of all time. You've missed Wesley Snipes opening the movie by saying, "Vampires exist," and it just goes from there. Just a poetry.
Yeah, I'll watch the Blade movies someday. I feel like maybe this is the year.
It's a good time to watch the Blade movies. Yeah.
It's a great time to watch the Blade movies. He's a director I've always liked more as like personality and what he's trying to do than his actual movies. Especially the most recent work.
I like what he tries to do, and I like what he Yes, exactly. And I like the I guess like the philosophy that he brings to filmmaking more than the actual films themselves.
I mean, the one I really like, I think I'll say, is The Devil's Backbone. That's a spooky, like ghost vibe movie that I think is really well made and like uses its limits, like its limitations really well, and still like scary and just works as a metaphor without having to do the whole, like, Pan's Labyrinth is like kind of building on top of that for sure, and visually incredible, like visually much better, but I think like The Devil's Backbone of those of his, I think that's my the one that stuck with me the most.
Yeah, same. I think I need to revisit it. It's been a while, but that's of that trilogy, that's my favorite, because we're going to talk about those movies eventually in depth.
Yeah. But
Kronos feels very early, and it feels very unfinished. And Pan's Labyrinth, it feels like a lot. It's a lot to take in. But yeah, I agree. Devil's Backbone, just the vibe of it just fits better for me. And it's among, I think, his best works. Wow. I did not think we were going to get this much out of Pinocchio, but we did.
Do you want to talk about something you've watched recently?
Yes. Just give me one second. Kind of somewhat related. I watched the Rob Zombie Munsters recently. Did you get around to seeing this at all? Or even like considering it for a second?
Yeah, I mean, I heard about it and I was like, oh, that seems cool, maybe I'll watch it. And then Halloween passed and I was like, okay, I'm probably not watching it.
So I have to give it a lot of credit. It made me, or it charmed me in ways that I didn't expect to charm me, for a number of reasons. One being, I was never a Munsters kid. I like the universal monsters and the aesthetics that they're playing off of, but I was always a Addams Family kid. So just right there, we're starting off at like a negative 10. We're starting off at like, this isn't my association. This isn't my clan. So I went in like, okay, well, maybe this will be fun. It's the end of the night. You know, something, this will be, you know, interesting, but I'm not expecting to really enjoy this greatly. But I was kind of sucked in to all of it, the aesthetics of it, the vibe of it. It feels like it fits in with that like old TV aesthetic, because even though I was an Addams Family kid, I still watched some Munsters here and there, so I had an idea of what it was supposed to be like. And I was just really charmed by the entire cast and the way in which they stuck to the roles. And like the comedy to me felt, it was so layered, like jokes on top of jokes, like a bad joke on top of a really good joke, like combined, and I thought delivered extremely well. And again, like, I can't stress enough, there are so many like little visual references and like visual cliches that are intentionally there to evoke older period monster movies that I appreciate it just on that level. Even if I had no context for the Munsters as a show, I would have appreciated all that stuff, all that Universal Monster stuff that, as I said, I do love and adore. So it worked for me on all those levels. And then Rob Zombie, just in general, as we've talked about, he's a brilliant director. Yes. He knows what he's doing. So like all like the craft level for something very basic was done extremely well, and handled it extremely well. So it's just like it's a good watch if you're just like, you know, something to not, you know, get too in depth, you know, not to feel too strongly about, but like, it's a vibe. It's definitely a good thing to watch when you're, okay, you know, had a couple, your glass of wine in maybe, and you're like, oh, this will be fun. So yeah, I definitely recommend it.
I mean, we don't really have anything like, there's a lot of Addams Family stuff going on. There's two animated movies and there's the Wednesday show, but none of those feel like the 60s stuff at all.
No.
And that's the stuff kind of I grew up on. Seeing pictures of the Munsters, I'm like, maybe I watched some of it and in my head it's just like filed under Addams Family.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's just like a lot of my Addams Family watching and probably my Munsters watching was in like Lebanon or other countries where it's like no notion of what like TV guides or whatever. It's just like, oh, exactly. It's on, it's fun. I'll keep watching it. So seems like maybe a thing I watched. So yeah, I'll add it to the list. I'll watch that sometime. Yeah. Like as just a fun little thing. I'll put it in my hungover movie pile. I feel like that's that it fits well there.
It's a very good pile. Very good pile. Yes. Yeah. No, that's perfect. You know, you watch I think it's Witches of Salem the night before, and then you watch the next day, and then yeah, perfect.
See, speaking of good hungover pile movies, I on January 1st, the hungover of all hungovers, I did watch A Bullet Train. never can remember how to pronounce David Leitch's name. That's the last time I'll say it. Action movie set on a train with like a bunch of like weird international assassins, fun cast. Brad Pitt is having a pretty good time. Yeah. It's fun. It's a fun movie. I liked it. As far as like this kind of action movies go, like it's very well done. I like a lot of the the characters themselves is why this movie works. Like Brian Tyree Henry and Aaron Taylor Johnson, that's his name.
Yeah.
Kick-ass kid. Playing a pair of British brother assassins, really good together. People showing up for like a fraction of a second and then just dying or disappearing. It's a fun time. I feel like you probably felt the same about this movie as me.
Yeah, it didn't stick with me.
Yeah.
So like in the months past of like people having very strong opinions either way about it, I was like, I don't understand. I don't understand like hating the movie or deeply loving the movie. It's just like it's a very competently made action movie. And I'm realizing we really have talked about every David Leitch movie on the show. Like all of them. I think maybe we didn't talk a lot about Deadpool 2. That was on the other show mostly. And like for a director who after Wick has really like done his own thing, it's an interesting addition because it feels like it took the least of his actual stuntman stuff.
Yeah, there's no big stunts in this, but there's a lot of good choreography and use of space, and it's very the action is very dance like. It's very, a lot of like because you're in small spaces that uses the environment and people spin around a lot. It's all well choreographed, I feel.
Yes, it is. It's well done, but it's not advanced. You know, like I think the thing that the thing that I appreciated about Atomic Blonde, despite not loving the movie, is all that like super advanced choreography. And this, but then again, you know, this movie, I felt like it really focused on story in a very basic way, but like it did it. It cared a lot about story. And considering his last movie being Hobbs and Shaw, that is a win, I would say. That is a positive.
When he finished post John Wick, when he split up with Chad Stahelski, and he made Atomic Blonde, a movie I'm on record for really, really liking. I got so excited for like what he could do if he was doing like independent, like small projects that are all with the John Wick care. In the action, because Atomic Blonde has like that action. It has a fun story. It has like the twists of. I think overall, this is a version of that, like that type of movie. I think Atomic Blonde is better. That's I don't know if you agree or not, I kind of like this, and it makes me because the next thing he's doing is like The Fall Guy, which is a movie about like a stuntman, where the main actor goes missing. And it's Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt, and just the cast overall with Aaron Taylor Johnson back and Stephanie Soo from Everywhere All at Once.
And
Winston Duke. So really good cast. They're really, really curious about that one. I feel like he's kind of wasted on those big action movies that anyone could direct. I mean, the action in Deadpool 2 is better than the action in Deadpool 1.
Yeah.
That's like for sure. I think I like Deadpool 2 more than Deadpool 1 even.
Deadpool 1 or Deadpool 2 makes Deadpool 1 like non-existent to me. Like it's like it replaces Deadpool 1. And that it's just like, oh, all the good stuff from Deadpool 1 is here, and also the action is very good. It's an extremely watchable movie.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, just looking at his filmography, it does look like he has a pattern here of the classic one for me, one for you thing, where it's franchise movie that is sort of my thing. Franchise Fall Guy seems to kind of be sort of a middle ground there. And that's interesting. Not a lot of directors get to do that anymore. get to really like do their own thing. So on that level, I appreciate Bullet Train for being its own thing.
It almost feels like he just cashed out post John Wick and Atomic Blonde, and probably made as much money as he ever wanted to make.
Yes.
Doing Deadpool and then Hobbs and Shaw, and now he can make whatever he wants.
Well, also, it's important to remember, both of them are still working on other people's movies, him and Chad. Yeah. Like, they're on every Avengers movie.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know which one of them worked on Birds of Prey.
Yes. I think that was him or Chad. I can't remember.
Yeah. Hard to say, but yeah, that's one where you can definitely feel the influence. But he also produced we talked last time about Violent Night. I think you liked it. I haven't seen it yet. And Nobody, that movie that's also like also, where there's some like care for that, like there's some of him in it for sure. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, it feels like he's doing his thing. I like it. Hopefully he doesn't do another Hobbs and Shaw and does like three more of these, these or Atomic Bonds like style movies of varying quality. That's kind of what I want to see. Like, it's nice to have a director that can just make like adult action movies that aren't franchise and aren't like The Rock joke movies.
And I do, you know, another thing I appreciate about Bullet Train is how much it reminded me of something like a Bad Times at El Royale. Which again, you know, that's a movie that I would put slightly above Bullet Train, but it reminded me enough of that movie that, again, that's not something I necessarily would have expected.
It's like all the background stuff, the non-linear storytelling. I guess I didn't like I like this movie overall. I think if it had a little bit less of that, it would probably be better. Too much. It leans too much on the flashback and the to the point where at some point it just becomes like, what are we doing here? Like, it's just like, show me the actual movie. It could have been like 20 minutes shorter with less flashbacks.
The major thing that I've brought up every time I've talked about this movie other than now is like, the movie could have been 110 minutes easily, or I'm not going to say 90, but it could have easily been just under 2 hours and been fine. There's a lot of stuff where it's like, did we need that? Did we need every actor who shows up? That was a thing that I remember thinking. Like, did we need Karen Fukuhara and Zazie Beetz? I like both of them in the movie for the minutes that they're there, but I don't know if we absolutely needed both of them to be in the movie. As much as I love both of those actresses and other things. And same with Bad Bunny. I don't know if he was necessary to the film. And the list goes on. Andrew Koji, Joey King. Like, it's a lot of people where it's like, oh, you just wanted to work with this person. You didn't actually have a thing in mind for this person to do that is more than just a few minutes long. So like, if you cut a couple of those things, I think the movie just moves faster. And it's more satisfying. Absolutely.
At least all those character feel fun still, even if it's like, why is Bad Bunny in this? Really, it does feel like,
is he in this because he has a contract with Sony or because they wanted to cast him? I don't know.
I mean, I'm going to compare to another movie I watched recently that I mentioned to you before this episode that I didn't want to talk about. But when you watch, I watched Amsterdam, right? The David O. Russell movie. And that cast is that's the most stacked cast in basically any movie. any modern movie, there's so many great actors in it, and just like, I don't know, Taylor Swift is in it also for like 5 seconds, and then she dies. Mike Myers is in it. it's like, why even? Like, Michael Shannon is in it and he's bad. Like, I don't think I've ever seen Michael Shannon bad in a movie, but like that movie is just like, you're like, why is this guy in this? And you don't see them anymore. And then you think for 2 seconds and they're like, why were there so, how are all these actors so bad in this movie? Why do Rami Malek and Anya Taylor-Joy play a couple that have like zero chemistry, like minus 10 chemistry? Why is De Niro in this movie? Like, it's weird. It's bad. It's bad. Anyway, this is much better. You could have cut a couple of those, but I guess I like it as is. I feel like I would have just structured it a bit differently, like less concentrate on the flash, like maybe have like one flashback scene in the middle where you get like most of it, and then you go back and just go full action for the rest, mm-hmm. instead of like start cutting the rhythm of it all multiple times.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, just, you know, to, you know, double down on that, just do the Bad Bunny flashbacks, because then you don't, because you forget about everything else going on, and it's like, well, why did we have Bad Bunny in the movie in the first place? Absolutely. Again, I did not think we'd get as much time out of Bullet Train as we did, but we spent a lot of time on Bullet Train, and totally fine with me. I will do an update on a movie that we talked about, I think, on the last recently watched. I got around to Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes.
Ooh.
That was a very good recommendation. It's not an overly complex movie to talk about. It's fairly simple, but what they're doing, the trick that they're doing, it's very well executed. And the result is a movie that is very charming. That cast just works. I feel like I know that group of people, despite them being from the exact opposite side of the world from me. But all of those people, they click together and they feel like a natural community, like around that little coffee shop there. It's like it goes some places. The Yakuza show up. It's just like, wow. That premise that they use of the 2 minutes, I think they utilize it well for interesting plant and payoff moments that are surprising in ways that I guess you should expect, but the way that they make it work is just, it's very good. I double down on Eric's recommendation from the last time that we talked about this.
It's just such a likable movie. So like the simple nature of the mechanic they're using makes it so immediately understandable, and then when they do something, like when something happens, you're like, oh, what's gonna happen in 2 minutes, 4 minutes, 6 minutes, like how is it gonna affect the present and the future? And then the way it reveals those moments is so well made, and then the way it all wraps up is just like it has such a slice of life ending to it all that I kind of like it. There's a such banality to the time travel mechanic, and it has such a banality to the ending of it, how it wraps up. I really like that. And a movie like this where you have the credits and then you have like kind of like bloopers and stuff on the credits just leaves you in a good mood. I don't know. I'll say this, it's going to be hard to not put this on my top 10 because just of how much I enjoyed it. It's such a perfect little thing. It's like one of those movies that for me, when it ended, it you have the feeling of, wow, I just love movies.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
A movie doesn't have to be like more than this. It can be just the 70-minute little sci-fi thing, and it's perfect as it is.
Yeah, it's very like it's very economic.
Yeah.
In its usage of story and just, yeah, it's just in and out very quickly, very, but again, like, it never wastes time. And I'm curious about this director now, this, who, it looks like he, I'm guessing this is like a web series, his most recent thing. It's like a adaptation of a manga. It's like 300 minutes. Okay. Yeah, I'm saving that to my Letterboxd. I want to see whatever this director does going forward, because I was just so instantly charmed by this within, you know, 20 minutes or so. Because that entire cast and those characters, there's just something about the vibe that they have. Again, it's just they're electric on screen as a combination of people. Yeah. Again, perfect little movie for people who are looking for something short and sweet. Do you want to talk about the Menu?
Yeah. Let's talk Menu. Let's talk about I like the Menu. I think it's not exactly what I expected. Like, I feel like I expected it to be a bit more more direct, but it goes in weirder direction than what I thought. Mm-hmm. What I thought it did, like it really goes for a loop. Like it takes its time. It the Menu is I looked up the director and I've never heard about him. Mark Millard.
Yeah, I know nothing of him. I know he worked for The Onion.
Oh, that's what I remember. He worked a lot on Succession and on Shameless. So a lot more TV. Right. And like his work on Succession, not a show I've watched, but just a show that I've heard a lot of people talk about, makes a lot of sense. So he directed 13 episodes of Succession.
That makes sense. I've only seen the first season or so of Succession, and it feels like they could almost be in the same universe in places. So especially with like the like stock market guys characters table that they introduce, those characters feel like Succession characters, the way that they're written and the way that they act those parts. That absolutely fits. The movie as a dark comedy, I think it really works. But it has like a lightness that I don't usually see in dark comedies. And I think that has to come from the performances. I don't know what you're feeling about it is, or maybe you didn't feel that same lightness.
It's funny. Like, definitely, yes. as like a comedy, as like it works really well as a dark comedy. And I think a lot of the lightness, like you said, is like, maybe not the lightness, but like, it's a movie that's kind of like hopeful in its conclusion, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of it comes with the writing of the character and the character of Anya Taylor-Joy, as like, she plays this woman that lies about her identity, but is like just she's a escort that was hired to accompany this guy on like a food experience on an island for the most well-known chef, and the chef and his staff are gonna kill everyone on the island, and the guy that brought her knew that they were all gonna die but still went. Because he's the biggest loser imaginable.
He's a real Paul Dano. He the Nick Holt character.
Yeah, the Nick Holt character is like, it starts off as, okay, he's just a foodie asshole, sure. And as the movie goes on, it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And then it gets actually better when you're like, oh, this guy's just like completely lost. He's nothing. he's like, he's like an Instagram meme page. Like,
yes,
basically, this is what he like becomes. He becomes like a food in, like, you realize, oh, he's like, what if a food influencer was just their Instagram presence and nothing else?
It's like the person who like reposts Salt Bae is what I'm thinking. It's that type of person, not that person exactly, but it's that same vibe of like, yeah,
that
they care girl, about the aesthetics of food and like the concepts of food, but like they have no actual care about the taste or
That girl on TikTok that did the Carbone review that went pretty viral. It's like if that like character kind of that these people like tend to play was a full person. And then you get all those side characters that are all like just in concept funnier, like the John Leguizamo playing like an actor that was in a terrible movie and that's just there to die because he was in a terrible movie. The three like shitty business guys, the mom that's just getting drunker and drunker and drunker. It's like the couple with the old man who wanted to fuck his daughter. It's good. Like it, the further it gets, the better it is, I feel like. I don't know. It's like a movie that is, I guess the reason why it works for me is that it's so much about the show of it all rather than, it's not a twist movie. There's like a little things here and there that are revealed, but like everything is pretty clear from the onset. And as the movie goes, like you get surprises, but it's not like there's nothing like super shocking about like, oh, this is how the world. No, it's just like you're part of a like all the characters in it and you as the viewer are part of like the spectacle of like in the way that like food has become like, I mean, food to that level is a spectacle in and of itself, for people that don't really that's just like don't really care about it, and it's just like a sign of like it's like everything, it's just a sign of having money. Sign of being rich is you can go to these restaurants whenever you like and just like have a meal and be like, oh, it's good, and then not care about it. I don't know. I think talking about it, which often happens, I feel, with this show, talking about it made me like this movie even more than I did when it ended yesterday.
Yeah. The more I sit with the movie, the more I like it. And I do agree that there's not like a twist. There is one thing where when you think about it, it kind of gives away a reveal, which is when you think about the concept of Anya Taylor-Joy dating Nicholas Holt. And you just think about that for a moment, you will realize what is happening, what is coming much sooner. I didn't realize this till I was sitting in the theater like, wait, would she actually date him? Would that actually be a thing that happens? And then the reveal that comes later, which I won't give away because it is a good reveal. It's just like charming.
I feel like I already did, but
yeah. Also, if you don't know it already,
Don't rewind and re-listen to what I said. The thing that I like the most about it is like, it's so centered around the show of it all. Like there's like showmanship in like the things that are happening, I mean, there's the scene in the trailer where they go like hunt, like they release everyone and they go hunting for them. And then they just catch them and bring them back. Like nothing happens. It's just, I think just that part was like, oh, this is good. This is really good.
Well, you know, and again, there's even the other, it's almost like an extra level of meta because it's also playing on like movies like The Hunt and like this, like, you know, people hunting people sort of subgenre.
Yeah, this is what I thought this movie was going to end up being, and I'm so glad it's not, because it's much better than that.
Yeah, it's far more interesting to me than that, which, you know, The Hunt is a movie where when I eventually got around to it, I was like, oh, this is not the movie anybody thought it was either. But this movie, I think it's what it sets you up for and what it actually gives you is far more interesting. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, like, I think I'll end on saying, like, as the black comedy, it really works. As a satire, there's stuff in there that's good. I don't know if it's I feel like it's like I don't know. It feels like maybe it gets lost, and it's like in the show too much to care about like what it's trying to criticize, it's still like I don't know, it's still really fun. I guess did you end up seeing Triangle of Sadness?
I haven't gotten around to that yet, but okay. So it's interesting. There are a lot of like dark comedies this season specifically.
Yeah.
Tar was a dark comedy, and as you keep on reminding me of the menu, like, I'm now in the background of my mind thinking about Tar. Did you get around to Tar?
No, I haven't seen Tar. That's like one I really, really need to watch.
I'm curious what you'll think of it, because not comparing the two movies, because I think that while being black comedies, they are very different and they're going about black comedy in different ways. I just keep on thinking about it as we're talking about the menu. It just keeps on like popping up, and like, you know, I'm trying to, and it makes me want to rewatch Tar again, which I haven't wanted to do since I saw it.
I'm really curious. Maybe we'll get to this comparison when we do our end of year episode.
Possibly.
I'm curious what you think of Triangle of Sadness in comparison to this, because that's the movie that came to mind the most. They're both like comedies, but also like really clearly try to be like a satire, like eat the rich satires, stuff in there. Two different success levels at points. I think Triangle of Sadness is kind of like this, kind of get lost in itself. This is a much tighter movie, but the highs of Triangle of Sadness are, I feel, better than the highs of the menu. That's
interesting.
That's what I'll say. There's the middle, like Triangle of Sadness is like three big acts, like clearly defined, and the middle half of Triangle of Sadness is like the funniest I laughed in a long time out of a movie. And also it's like, oh yeah, this is actually like intersected with like, oh, this is actually really good stuff. Whereas this, like, overall, it's tighter, it's more fun, it's a more fun overall movie, but there's nothing that's quite as good as those moments in Triangle of Sadness. If Triangle of Sadness was just the middle third, it would be in my top 10 probably, but because because it's a whole movie, I don't know if it's gonna make it.
Interesting. Now I really want to watch Triangle. Yeah, it just keeps on. where do we go from here? Anything
else you want to talk about that you watched recently? I think that's most of it for me.
Well, I guess I only have one like super recent movie I guess I could talk about. It's a movie that I don't know if anybody's seen really. So Blumhouse made a deal with Amazon sometime during the pandemic, and the movies that they've been putting out there have seemingly only gotten less attention with every movie that they've put out. This is a movie, I guess it's from 2020. I'm very confused about this because I've heard people talk about it coming out this year, called Run, Sweetheart, Run. Have you heard anything about this movie? Is this been on your radar at all?
I've definitely never heard about this movie.
Okay, so it's a movie where I won't give away what happens, but it is it's a movie about I think she's a paralegal, I want to say, who goes on like a business meeting that kind of turns into a date. The actress who's the lead, she's been in a couple things here and there. She was in that newest Charlie's Angels. It's probably the thing most people have seen her in. And she plays like a single mom who's just, you know, trying to make it in the business world. And the date is with Pilo Espec, who I think most of us know him from Thrones. As a, I'm gonna call him buffed up Theon, shithead Theon, and he's very charming during the date. He's very interesting, a little bit maybe, you know, messed up by just being a white businessman. There are a couple little. Maybe red flags that come through, but nothing too serious. And then the date goes bad. The movie unfurls from there. And it's just a kind of interesting thriller, kind of horror movie that I found really enjoyable. And I suggest people check it out if you haven't seen it. It is on Amazon here in the US. I imagine it's likewise in similar places throughout the world. So that's a recommendation from me. I'm not gonna belabor it though, so
sounds interesting. It's like when you say the word Blumhouse, I'm like, I feel like it's always like 75-25. I've never heard about the movie you're gonna mention. And I feel like I tried to follow even horror movies in general, but yeah, that sounds interesting. I mean, I like him at the very least. I was looking at his filmography, and he's like in every like big action movie project I would never watch. Playing probably a similar guy. Like he's in The Great Wall and Ghost in the Shell and Overlord, Uncharted.
He's getting a lot of that role. He's one of the modern that guys. It's like weird spy movie, weird action movie, that Stallone movie Samaritan. he's in a lot of that stuff, but occasionally he's really good in them. Did you see Overlord?
No, I haven't. Of those movies, that's the one I would watch probably.
You should watch Overlord.
You talked about it when it came out. I just never got around to it. I should. Yeah. I should.
Even like outside of the horror movie aspect of it, the movie just fucks.
Yeah.
It just does. It's like, it's a very compelling, well done movie. And then there's also the horror elements, which I thought were really well done. Wyatt Russell is in it doing the best impression of his father you could possibly imagine. Really good. Check out Overlord, people. It's been 5 years almost. No, it's been exactly 5 years, actually. I think we can wrap, unless you had a final thing you wanted to recommend.
Maybe a final smaller movie that people haven't really talked about. Just a classic like Eric end of episode documentary recommendation. I watched from last year The Janes, which is a documentary about a group of women in Chicago in pre Roe versus Wade that did illegal abortion, and like that created a whole system where people would call doctors and the doctors would contact them and they would like take them secretly to places where doctors and non-doctors would give them safe abortions, because before that it was done literally through the mob in Chicago. And how these women that are in the documentary talking about their experiences doing that, women talk about like receiving abortions through that system. There's a cop that arrested them that's in the documentary. It's just really, really good. It's just a very well-made documentary. The subject could not be more, could not come at a better time. Yep. Considering what happened last year, I feel like it's pretty, it's just a really good watch, and it's really, really worth it.
I'm adding that to my HBO Max list now.
Yeah.
I know it's on Crave up there.
Yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I watched it on Crave here, so it's probably on HBO Max. So The Janes, really good documentary.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great. Great pick. And like you just mentioned, very, very, very relevant. So
yeah,
definitely gonna check that out. Perfect. All right. plugs and stuff.
Quickly, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd. I'm at E-Sayer, E-S-A-Y-O-U-R. And that's it.
All right. I should be getting this episode out pretty soon. So the Phantom Zone top fives that we do, those have been recorded. They're done. They just need to be edited and released. So should be able to listen to that soon after this soon before this. So yeah, go check that out. I don't think there's any surprises in there, but maybe, I don't know. Look forward to that. And that is all I have as far as plugs.
Bye.
Bye.
Fuck Pinocchio, this little shit. I